Christian Parenting.
Welcome to the Living Wholehearted Podcast. We are Jeff and Tara Mattson, a husband and wife team who is shrinking the integrity gap in our own lives and helping others do the same. I'm a leadership and organizational development coach, and Tara is a licensed marriage and family therapist.
We believe that if you have a following, you are a leader, and how you lead matters. Whether you are leading in the home, work, or community, we are bringing you biblical, clinical, and relational wisdom to help you in every relationship that matters most to you. None of us do this perfectly, but we are leaning into the reality of our humanity and profound wisdom of grace. So we're in the middle of a sexual wholeness series. We're helping leaders live and lead with integrity at Living Wholehearted, from professional counseling team outside of Portland, Oregon, to our executive coaching and our org development team, as we work with leaders nationwide to help leaders with a holistic approach to their leadership from the inside out. Regardless of where you're walking as a leader today, whether you're in the home, parenting, you're at work, you're serving in the community, sexuality is a part of every one of our stories. Today, we're focusing on the assessment and treatment of sex addiction, a topic that will not be for younger ears, but for maybe your teenagers and above, but particularly for you as you think about your own story and those you walk with. I do want to warn you that this episode might cause triggers, and just hang with us. If you need to take a break and then come back, go ahead and do that. But we're talking about this in a manner of grace, with hope, and a lot of practicality today. So many of you don't know this, as I transitioned from professional counseling to executive coaching, that I spent many years in marriage and family therapy, actually working with leaders in sexual betrayal and addiction. And one of those partners that I worked with has been Dr. Ryan Hosley, who's been an expert in helping men and women with sex addiction for many decades now. I want you to lean in. He loves the Lord, but he brings an incredible expertise and many years of experience that we're going to glean into. And I'm so excited to introduce you to Ryan. Ryan, it's so good to have you.
It's great to be with you, Tara. So good to see you.
Okay, so why don't you start by just telling us a little bit more about you and how you started doing this work and why you still do this work?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I've been in private practice here in Portland, Oregon for going about 17 years, and just went through George Fox CITE program, got trained specifically at the get-go as a CSAT, Certified Sex Addiction Therapist, because that's why I became a psychologist, was to help men and women, help families that have been really impacted by sexual addiction. So but along the way, right, raising a family, I have a beautiful wife, been married 22 years, and God's blessed us with seven awesome kids. And it's just a ball now as they're starting to age and just embrace life to the fullest. So very full life, very fun. Definitely at the work day in and day out of helping people, as about 90% of my practice is helping families move through the crisis, really, and the impact of sexual addiction.
Yeah. Talk about, you know, everybody has a reason why they do what they do. And many of us haven't really taken time to think back, to look at our stories and to see how God has been equipping us, both from our personal story and then from our skill sets. Is there anything particular in your story that you look back and go, I can see God preparing me for this work that I do today?
Yeah, for sure. And just in even thinking about that question, though, there's that little twinge of like, hey, how real do we get here, right? Just to be in that full transparency, you know, I had a sexual addiction as a young man, exposed to pornography at early age, sexually abused about age 5 by a babysitter, which created kind of a ripe environment for me to really succumb to a sexual addiction with pornography and masturbation. And so going through my journey took me to a place where I was in college and just going, I cannot live like this anymore. Was dating a woman who's now my wife, and just confessed to her one day on a phone call. She's like, you sound kind of down. What's going on? And I'm like, and I'd just never been a good liar. So I just told her I was just on the internet looking at some stuff I probably shouldn't be looking at. And she just approached me with so much grace and really gave me the room to, at that time, just kind of scratch and claw and figure out how to not be in that addiction. But I also, it was a time, 1996, the internet's really taking the world by a storm, and a lot of my college roommates were just struggling. And I just was able to share my story and start helping them get out of that challenge of sexual addiction. And not all of them maybe were addicted, but just use of pornography, et cetera. And so, seeing maybe a giftedness there and an opportunity to help people, decided to go sharpen my axe, right? To go Abraham Lincoln, right? You know, given 6 hours to chop down a tree, it's been the first two sharpening my axe. And so that meant 5 years of education to really pursue the skill set to be effective in helping people really break free from addictive behaviors and the family systems that often support that. So yeah, very personal story that, you know, at the time and place when I'm vulnerable with my clients, I will share when appropriate to relate to them in a very real way. So
yeah, thank you. It's hard for me to call you Dr. Ryan because I know you're Ryan, but I'm going to call you Dr. Ryan going forward because I know and some of your clients call you Doc, right? Is that kind of the going?
A handful call me Doc. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's all good. I have a hard time not saying, hey, Dr. Hosley is my father. But it's all good. I'll embrace that.
So I'll do the in-between, Dr. Ryan. So we'll go from there. Well, thank you for being vulnerable, because I do think that's true of all of us and the things that we're called to and the things that that trigger us or we fight for and the things that we're passionate about usually come from our own stories. So you said several things that I know we're going to get to: trauma, exposure, but the word sex addiction, you said not everyone looking at porn had sex addiction. So let's start by defining, what is a sex addiction and how do we know the difference between what maybe in the church we might language as, yeah, I struggle with pornography, mm-hmm. to I actually have a sex addiction. What's the difference there, and define that for us?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think it's a super important question. Frankly, anytime somebody comes into my office, I'm staring at them, and all half the time they're saying, hey, I think I have an addiction. I say, we'll see. Let's really figure that out. Because there's bad choices, and then there's addiction. And I think to define sexual addiction, you first have to kind of go, what is addiction? Right? And to go back to the archives of my training with Dr. Patrick Carnes, just a pioneer in the field of sexual addiction, you know, my first training. He said, addiction is a pathological relationship with a mood-altering substance or behavior. And so breaking it down, pathological relationship is kind of that classic, it's probably not working that well for you, right? There's some consequences, challenges because of your choices and behaviors, but with a mood-altering substance or behavior. And so it's something we are doing that's changing how we feel, so that we can feel different. And, I call it feeling, it's just trying to feel good, feel different than we feel. So that's kind of maybe a baseline definition of addiction, which then applies to, you know, substances, behaviors, you know, gambling addiction, food addiction, marijuana addiction, really even codependency. So it's kind of a broad category. So sexual addiction though, right? If we see a history of behaviors, repeated efforts to stop, continuing despite consequences, things like escalation of behaviors, maybe used to look at this type of pornography, now I'm looking at this type of pornography, or maybe started with, you know, flirting in public, but now you're flirting at a strip club, for example. There's escalation often. And, so we look at a variety of factors. But that's hopefully that gets to it is that whether it's one behavior or the other, there's a lot of things going on, right, with that. So does that make sense, Tara?
Absolutely. And I think it's a really good clarifier in terms of choosing that substance, whatever it is, or behavior to alter the mood. And most of the time we're doing it unconsciously. I mean, I think most people are doing this out of just years and years of those robotic responses. And then slowly there's kind of an awareness that starts to happen to go, oh, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to alter that mood, mm-hmm. or meet a deeper need. One of the reasons I appreciated working with you over the years with a lot of the couples that we would walk with is because you really helped not only with all the history you have with Dr. Carnes and your training, but you helped addicts really understand the deeper root system that was playing a role. And I'm going to say this first before we dive into that. In the church, a lot of church culture will minimize sex addiction through prayer and accountability and white knuckling it. You mentioned that a bit.
Totally.
Can you talk a little bit about what does sex addiction recovery really do to help somebody versus some of those myths or things that we do in the church that actually are enabling sex addiction?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think the first thing that we have to really get real about is that it's a problem, right? That it really is a problem. And it's not something like, maybe look at this here or there, but I'm working on it. Because I think that as a church, we're so often like, please, oh, please, let this not be a big deal. Mm-hmm. Can it please go away? Whether it's a spouse or, you know, maybe it's a pastor and the elder board is like, please, oh, please, just make this go away. And I would just say generally that it doesn't. It doesn't just go away. It comes back. So I think, you know, maybe a myth is that I've stopped that behavior, so I'm good. I generally actually think that's a myth. And because if there's an addiction, which this goes back to, you know, what makes an addiction or not, addiction is very, very rarely a singular behavior. You know, I like to joke with people and go, hey, I have actually never met an alcoholic. But I've met people addicted to alcohol, tobacco, working too much, spending money frivolously, and codependency. So addiction runs in packs. So the challenge is that if behavior is just stopped, and which I believe is a myth, hey, they've stopped that behavior, then it could probably come back. And so doing a really good assessment on the front end, I like to ask, you know, it's not like, what are you addicted to? It's like, what all are you addicted to? Right. And really understanding the full spectrum of behaviors. Right. So that's maybe one myth to try to stay on that question is that, you know, hey, stopping is enough. I think another myth is that, you know, I'll take care of this and I don't really need to involve my wife too much because I'm kind of figuring it out. And if there's a marriage in place, I just have seen that repeatedly is a cause for this coming back, for resurfacing, because, and it's predominantly a male issue, even though not really. I think we're more like 70-30 now, right? But say it is a male spouse to a wife, if there's not a disclosure process in place where there's been a very open disclosure, and then an ongoing disclosure process, even using the word polygraph involved, then there's a really high likelihood that it will come back. So there's a couple of myths that I think we need to probably address as we look at this issue.
Yeah, that's so important for everybody in the community, not only if it's our own story, but we're walking alongside with someone else, that it's one weed. I always think of weeds, right? Like if we pluck the weed and we didn't get to the root system, more weeds are going to keep growing. And weeds are always present just in a fallen world. And yet there's an intentionality of trying to weed so that the garden can grow, right? And so, yeah. But you've got to get to that root system for that weed. And a lot of times we're just plucking in the church by just going, okay, the behavior stopped. So I appreciate you saying, yeah, there's a lot more that's probably growing because the root system needs to be addressed.
Yeah. I mean, if I could elaborate on that, I mean, I really think we need to look at addiction as a system, right? And so because it's systemic, it's usually a variety of behaviors, but more so than that, it's often a way of relating to self and others. Right. And so, I mean, you know, one of the things I try to communicate to my clients is like, what does addiction really look like? And actually, if it's okay, I wanted to read, I wrote just a quick vignette, right, to try to help people see this. Because people kind of, well, the addict is the person in sex that's seen prostitutes or massage parlors. But I'd say not necessarily. So just let me read a couple of these if I could. So like, here's one, right? The man who has a wife who works nights, and after a long day of frustration at work, the only way to unwind and fall asleep is to watch ESPN. While simultaneously toggling through his multiple social media feeds on his phone. Transitions into playing a video game for an hour or so, then retires into the bedroom alone, to fall asleep by watching miscellaneous YouTube videos that invariably lead to some type of sexually exciting content and often to masturbation. He feels stuck and ashamed. Or a different example, if I could. It's the busy executive who dutifully makes a trip to the local Starbucks for his afternoon coffee, an often sugary and fatty caffeinated beverage that takes the edge off the stress and provides the kick needed to make it through the day. A 50 to 60 hour work week taking its toll, tapping almost daily into adrenaline stores with its constant demands, he feels exhausted every evening. Evenings are filled with eating more than he should. Reaching that semi-comatose state, he washes down the remnants of his meal with a couple glasses of wine, a strong beer, or a mixed drink. He feels used up and defined by his bank balances. Or if I can, a female example, because it looks different for women oftentimes. The wife of a successful professional and mother to adult children who has lived in fear nearly every day of her life. Fear of the business not working to produce enough income, fear of her children not making good decisions, fear of this virus or the swine flu. Nobody can remember these days. Her family laughs and mom worries enough for everyone. She tries to laugh it off as well, but she knows that she doesn't know how to not worry. Her motto might be a crisis a day keeps bad feelings away. The constant stress and intensity of life has become her companion. To cope, she works out daily, often 1 to 2 hours. She fears gaining weight and being unattracted to her husband. And the routine and exhaustion of the workout routine is the only way to calm herself. Nearly every evening, with only 1 4-ounce glass of wine to be sure it doesn't become a problem, she takes the edge off her day and loosens up enough to approach her husband sexually or respond to his advances. She only feels beautiful in his embrace and fears that if she can't give it to him, he will find it somewhere else. They have sexual intercourse nearly every day. It has become mindless. She feels alone. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So as you can see in those stories, it's a variety of behaviors, but it's a constancy, and there's elements of shame, loneliness, fear, isolation that are really the highway oftentimes that addiction thrives in, that environment. And so it's looking holistically at the system in order to discern what really is the problem and then how do we start navigating towards healing.
Yeah, which doesn't happen overnight in a quick successions, right, Dr. Ryan? So this can be a really slow process. And thank you for those stories, because I think those listening, it might have made some people feel uncomfortable. They recognize themselves. And I think that's good. It's actually the starting point of what you said, of we've got to recognize there's a problem and we can get help. I always say healthy is asking for help, being able to just say, hey, yeah, I admit it and I need some help. That's actually very healthy and a part of integrity and shrinking our integrity gaps. So the next step is getting help and moving towards recovery. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about the progress of someone coming in, that's their scenario, to when you're starting to see them moving down the line of recovery and actually healing, and rather than somebody who's just going through the motions because their spouse is saying you need to go get help. Talk about the healthy looking recovery first, and then we can talk about maybe some signs of someone who's just going through the motions.
Yeah, for sure. I just actually had a conversation with somebody yesterday, and I just said, hey, he's brand new on this journey. He's just getting real with his story. And I said, hey, here's what we need to do is that I need you to learn what this is really all about. To quote M. Scott Peck in The Road Less Traveled, I said, because, mental illness, right, is the heart of self-delusion. And the quote, though, is that mental health is a commitment to reality at all costs, right? So when I see somebody that's on their way to getting healthy, they're getting real about the problem. The first step really truly is coming out of the shadows of shame and isolation and fear. And just confession, right? I'm admitting, hey, I have an issue here. I've been hiding this. I think that's the first step, right? Because that opens the door for all kinds of healing for them to happen in their life. But what I like to see, if somebody's really on a path to healing, number one, you need to understand the nature of addictive illness, right? What you don't know actually is a bummer. Ignorance is not bliss, right? And it's a matter of going, hey, what do I not know about my own issues? Number two is, I call it return to relationship. whether it's a relationship with yourself. I really do believe confession is a very powerful part of this healing journey, right? It says, you know, in scripture, right? Confess your sins to God and you receive salvation. Confess your sins to other people and you receive healing. So that's a very important part of the story. But then there's a very a practicality to it. You have to stop. You really have to stop. And that sometimes takes a lot of structure. And depending on how aggressive or intense is a better word, the addiction is. Some people, I've had clients, frankly, masturbating multiple times a day, for example. That's intense. And even sexual addiction has been likened to a cocaine addiction in terms of the intensity of it. So you may need a lot of structure, but we need to stop the behaviors and then stop the other behaviors that are substitutionary. I had a gentleman one time in my office and seen him about 6 weeks. And I looked at him one day, I'm like, are you gaining weight? He's like, I'm like, come on. How much weight are you gaining? He goes, about 15 pounds. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, well, I used to go to this certain convenience store in my work truck and buy a porno magazine and masturbate and throw it in the dumpster and leave. And if I do that now, my wife's going to leave me. I'm like, what are you doing? Because I go to the same place and I buy a 1 pound bag of peanut M&Ms. I'm like, and I just said it, it came out. I'm like, you have got to stop masturbating with your mouth. Mm. And because he's still getting the dopamine, yeah. Still getting the rush, and you have that addiction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get that addiction substitution. And so we have to really stop. And it's usually two or three. I joke about the ATF, alcohol, tobacco, and fantasy. We have to go after these things and really stop the system. And then I think the, you know, if there's a fourth thing, it's dealing with attachment and dealing with trauma. That starts getting you into the root and creating a healing environment for them, the addict personally. And if there's a fifth thing, it's, and this what I think this gets missed a lot. You have to address the system, the family system. If the addict is in a marriage relationship, you need to build a proper foundation for the marriage to heal. We shouldn't overlook it. I'm sure you guys are going to be talking about it, but the spouse in these situations mm-hmm. often has symptoms of a really traumatic post-traumatic stress disorder. It's violent to a spouse to find out what they didn't know for maybe years. And they need so much support and structure, but they also need to be able to create some healthy boundaries that say, hey, no, this is not going to happen. Here's the consequences if that happens. So the addict is, in one sense, forced to change. And I think that's really essential because if they don't feel that pressure, oftentimes it makes it too easy to relapse. So those are a few elements. I mean, there's probably a few more, but if somebody's very broken before God, not just before man, but, you know, David in scripture, when he was confronted by the prophet, I think it was Nathaniel or Prophet Nathan, mm-hmm. He said, hey, it's before you and you only, Lord, have I sinned, when he committed adultery with Bathsheba and murder of Uriah the Hittite. And he was broken before God. And that's a really important place to get as somebody who's in recovery. Just go, hey, I need to stop doing this. It's destroying my relationship with myself, my spiritual nature. It's really destroying who I am. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, all of those pieces, the journey is it's a slow and steady drip. And one of the things that we noticed over the years with the David heart versus maybe what we've compared to the Saul heart is trying to manage consequences versus mm-hmm. really moving through that recognition of reality, you said, of all that has been lost and the cost, and especially even for those like your spouse and the PTSD. I mean, so many couples over the years, you know, where I was like their fifth counselor or exposure because so often we're working on the repair of the marriage and we're not really addressing all of the dynamics that are running interference. And so, you're naming all kinds of pieces that have to be truly worked mm-hmm. on by the addict and also mm-hmm. the spouse who needs to work through their own PTSD and their own trauma of this.
Yeah. I mean, if I could emphasize at all, there's two things that I get honestly really passionate about. The first of all is addressing the marriage situation. If we're going to realize full change there has to be a proper marriage foundation. I'm pretty passionate and convicted about a disclosure process. And I recommend polygraphs appropriately used all the time. I remember Dr. Ted Roberts was developing his ministry. We were doing our training at the same time. And I was like, Ted, do you do polygraphs? And he just laughed. He's this wise old guy. He goes, Ryan, I work only with pastors. They're liars. I use a polygraph on everyone, right? And they can be controversial, but I just have found that they are so helpful, because a wife who doesn't know what she doesn't know doesn't know what she doesn't know, and she can't heal.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Second element that I'm absolutely convicted about is the power of forgiveness and doing good forgiveness work. That's forgiveness of self, forgiveness of others, because you don't have to go very far into the world of addiction recovery to know that one of the leading causes of relapse is resentment. And so being sure that people do that forgiveness work, and maybe having a spiritual guide through that, or a good counselor, or a good 12-step process to go through that forgiveness work, is absolutely essential to addressing the core. Those are a couple of biggies that if your listeners take anything away and they do those are huge to helping them really overcome this.
I love it. Okay. So the practical question that always gets asked, I know for you and for I in these years, how long is this all going to take? So what is the average number you tend to throw out based on the research and the experience with doing this kind of recovery? What's the range that you would give people if they're asking or thinking that?
Yeah, I like to smile and laugh a little with my clients. I typically answer that question with a question. I go, what kind of result do you want? I go, do you just want the pain to stop, or do you want to heal this situation and heal yourself? Because if you just want the pain to stop, we can probably get you to stop doing these behaviors that are hurting you and hurting your family in about 6 months. We probably can. But that's level one change. If you really want to heal, though, all the research suggests this is a 2 to 5 year process, because you're restructuring your relationship with yourself. It's a relationship work. I tell people a positive outcome is that you come through a healing process and you have an amazing relationship with yourself. You've learned how to have amazing and healthy relationships with other people, and you've developed a vibrant spirituality. And that just takes work. Because I joke a lot. I go, hey, unless you were raised by like a combo of like Jesus and Mother Teresa, you got some funk in your system. And to learn relationship skills, if you didn't learn it in your family system, you have to learn it now. We're not intuitively skilled at relationships, but ultimately overcoming addiction is moving from a relationship with a substance or behavior. I call it Anita. I go, you know, you have a relationship with Anita, like I need a drink, I need a burger, I need to go use some, you know, to a relationship where you're going, who Anita? Like, who do I need now? Because ultimately you want to take your pain to a relationship, your story to somebody you can communicate with. Because that's what we're doing. That's what healing's about. So that takes some time. That's why it's a 2 to 5 year journey if we're really going to get the work done.
Thank you for that, because that's exactly, it doesn't sound encouraging, and yet nothing good and lasting actually is fast. I always tell people, don't trust the fast and furious recommendations or promises, because the good stuff is when we're willing to let the process happen. So why don't we talk to that person who's like, I'm listening, this feels familiar, but I am overwhelmed and don't know where to start. Maybe they're the spouse, or maybe they're the addict themselves. What do you recommend are some next steps?
Well, practically speaking, most change starts with the injured spouse. Almost 80, 90% of the time. I mean, I have on one hand, I can count, frankly, how many men or women for that matter have called me of their own volition and stayed in treatment not long enough to get healthy. So if you're the spouse that's wondering if there's some process going on, you suspect, I would say trust your gut, first of all, and create a situation where there's a loving boundary that says, hey, these behaviors that I'm witnessing or suspecting make me feel a lot of pain, vulnerability, hurt, scared. I don't want to feel that way in this relationship. And so I need to feel joy and hope and healthy when I'm around you. because I want to feel that way. I need you to change. I need you to get help. And then this is not a request. This is actually a boundary. And the consequences of you deciding to not go get help, or us not going in together to get help, or for us to not read this book together or view this video course together or something, is that we're going to create some space. And that could be you're on the couch for a week or a month, or you know, you get to sleep in the garage or whatever. Some sort of appropriate consequence that makes the person setting the boundary feel safe, first of all, saying, hey, this is really important to me and I need you to get it. And then the flip side of the consequence is that it irritates the person that needs to change. It's not punishment. It's a healthy boundary. That's how this change starts for probably 80, 90% of people. It's just saying, I can't have this in my life anymore. I need you to get help. So that's for this, you know, maybe spouse of an addict. For the addict yourself, if you're listening, I would just say you need to feel hope. You do not have to live this way anymore. You know, when you're alone and you're in your car or in the awake, sleepless of your own night, where you're just laying there staring at the ceiling, that this is a horrible place for you to be. And you don't have to be there anymore. There's so many resources. There's people that want to know your story. And your greatest fear of telling your story, that everyone will leave you, reject you, and because you are worthless, is not true. It's a lie. And time again, I have seen spouses, let's call it women in this case, so accepting of your failure. They don't like being lied to anymore, though. So you have to change. You need to come clean and get some resources. So I think in terms of getting resources, if you want me to speak to that, you know, we need to get educated. There's so many great organizations that have awesome material. I know you mentioned communicating with Jay Stringer. I believe his book, Unwanted, is one of the best resources that I've seen come out in 5 or 10 years on sexual brokenness and how to access healing for the addict. I think you need to access maybe a good therapist. And you know, you and I are both therapists, Tara. I love therapists, but there are some therapists that are not qualified to handle this.
Yes.
There's a lot of layers to this stuff, and it's not just maybe an affair. They need to really discern and get somebody who understands this. So I recommend seeking out, and I'm trained as a CSAT, Certified Sex Addiction Therapist, through an organization called the International Institute of Trauma and Addiction Professionals, ITAP, that also trains pastors. It's, I think, a PSAT, Pastoral Sex Addiction Therapist. But finding somebody that understands and has been trained really well to do a good assessment of your needs and of the couple's needs to start that journey. And in addition to that, man, there are so many purity-oriented communities available. I am unabashedly a big fan of 12-step. Sexaholics Anonymous, Sex Addicts Anonymous. It's a very robust program. There are also some great resources that Pure Life Alliance, et cetera. I can't name them all. There's so many. I'm sure you guys have a resource list anyway. But just getting out of the shadows and getting into some sort of community is an absolute must for getting started on the healing process.
Yeah, to going back to that confession process, it's part of the healing. So before we wrap up, Ryan, is there something you want to leave us with in terms of just encouragement and one last thought?
Yeah, you know, I do. I think sometimes we overcomplicate things. And if we're looking at kind of our history, I feel like I've learned more from the book of Genesis than any other book anywhere in the world on human psychology and relationship and our relationship with God. And, you know, those first few chapters after the fall, you see so many stories of men and men predominantly adding wives unto themselves. And so much of idolatry back in that Old Testament era, I mean, 90% of it was sexual in nature. And so I think what we have is just a long history of as human beings trying to cope with our own insecurities and anxieties about life through sexual pursuit. To feel powerful, to feel whole, to feel connected. And the solution has always been what it was back then. It's, are we healing in our relationship with God? Are we in a mindful state of worship? Where my take on the word worship is agreeing with what God has already says is true about you, your situation, what it takes to heal from the anxieties of life, and just pressing into that relationship. Because the gospel means good news. And man, I hope that we can embrace the good news of that really personal healing relationship with our Lord and Savior, Son Jesus Christ, a vibrant relationship with the Holy Spirit, and live in the fullness that we were created to live in. Then we don't need to pursue anything illicit sexually. We wouldn't want it. Why would you want to ruin an amazing relationship? So if there's any last word, it's pursue that. That's where wholeness is found. It's where it will always be found. The game hasn't changed. It's just a different season in the game.
Thank you, Dr. Ryan Hosley. Okay, so talk to our audience about where they can find you and some of the resources that you are providing today.
For sure, yeah. You know, so I'm in private practice in Portland, Oregon. Have a location here. And I love seeing people in my office. Maybe I have a little bit of like, I'm over the whole pandemic thing, but I love it when people come to my office. So I'm available there. I was asked to contribute to a book that came out a few years ago called The Overcomer's Edge. A good dear friend of mine, a pastor, was writing a book with just some common no-nonsense advice on how to overcome challenges in life. And he asked my wife and I to write a chapter each. My wife wrote on overcoming betrayal, which she just so compassionately addresses what it's like to feel a partner that has an addiction. And it's her story of when we were dating. And then I wrote a chapter called Overcoming Addiction. And so the leader author on that is Paul Sika, T-S-I-K-A. And then, Dr. Ryan Hosley and Cameo Hosley. Also have, Tara, really in response to the pandemic, you know how that disrupted what we were doing as therapists so much. Created a website called The Overcomer's Way, dovetailing off of the book Overcomer's Edge, where I created a video course called Overcoming Addiction and a video course Overcoming Betrayal Phase 1 and Phase 2 that I believe hits 80% of the most common conversations as well as tools that you need to access this healing process. There's a PDF for every video. It's robust work. But I wanted to create something that people could access because I have people calling me out of state. I'm like, hey, I can't see you, even though everything's telehealth right now anyway. So those are some of the resources that are available that we have created. And I do highlight some resources there as well. I know I've dropped a few book names out there. Help Her Heal by Carol Jurgensen Sheets and Alan Katz. It's got kind of Katzy, Sheets and Katz and Sheets and Katz. That is a really great book for the addict to relate to his betrayed spouse and get started. So those are some resources.
Fantastic. We'll have those in the show notes. So if you were like quickly trying to write all that down, well, you can go back to the show notes. We'll make sure those resources are there. And that's some of the good news that came out of the pandemic, right? Just those resources that we all kind of pivoted. And I know that's a trigger word, but created. So I'm so grateful for that, knowing all the years of the work that you're doing here in the Oregon area. So if you're part of our national, even world audience, you can access those resources from Dr. Ryan Hosley, and we'll have those in our show notes and some of those book recommendations. Thank you again for the work that you're doing and for just the resources and just your honesty and vulnerability here today, Ryan. So appreciate you and all that you bring. So good to have you today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Tara. Appreciate you big time.
Thank you. And if you are in the Oregon area and are looking for professional counselors, you can visit livingwholehearted.com for our team. We do a lot of partnering with Dr. Ryan Hosley, and he's not too far from our offices. And if you're a pastor or a leader and you're trying to grow in this area, we do executive coaching and trying to help. How do we build healthy systems where people can thrive and find restoration? You can learn all of that at livingwholehearted.com. And make sure you check out some of our other episodes during this sexual wholeness series, where we talk about betrayal, help raising kids with healthy sexuality with Jay Stringer, and more. So until next week, be the leader that you would follow.
This podcast is powered by Living Wholehearted, Courageous Girls, and the Christian Parenting Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us in this critical movement of shrinking our integrity gaps between what we preach and live.